Hi, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. This podcast of The People's Pharmacy is brought to you by Squatty Potty Toilet Stools. They create healthy toilet posture for fast, easy elimination. Learn more about toilet posture and health at squattypotty.com. That's SQUATTYPOTTY.com.
People often worry about getting enough calcium or potassium. But what about a crucial mineral that's often overlooked? This is The People's Pharmacy with Terry and Joe Graydon.
Magnesium is essential for an amazing range of bodily functions. Every cell in the body requires magnesium to work well. But many people are deficient in this crucial nutrient, either because we don't get enough in our diet or because we take medications that deplete our bodies of magnesium.
Magnesium deficiency can lead to anxiety, depression, migraines, strokes, irregular heart rhythms, high cholesterol, and heart disease, not to mention diabetes. How much magnesium do you need?
Coming up on The People's Pharmacy, find out why you should be paying more attention to this miracle mineral.
First, this news.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, a large epidemiological study has found that popular pain relievers increase the risk of death from stroke. Danish researchers analyzed the records of more than 100,000 patients hospitalized with a first stroke between 2004 and 2012. The investigators were looking at the use of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs in relationship to stroke. After analyzing the data, the Danish scientists discovered that new users of pain relievers such as diclofenac, etodolac, and meloxicam were 42% more likely to die after a stroke than patients who were not taking NSAIDs. Users of COX-2 inhibitors like celecoxib were 19% more likely to die after a stroke. The report concludes, our study supports stepping up efforts to make sure people with a higher risk of stroke are not prescribed these medications when other options are available.
Such research puts millions of people in a double bind. That's because 39 million people in the United States suffer from persistent pain. That amounts to approximately 19% of the population. Without safe and effective pain relief, they frequently experience disability, depression, or anxiety.
People suffering from an allergic skin reaction might be shocked to realize that sometimes the cream or lotion they use to calm their rash or hives could be making it worse. It can be difficult to identify an allergic reaction to a topical corticosteroid. In addition, some people don't tolerate antihistamines or drugs used to treat asthma. Their symptoms just seem to get worse. But because they already had symptoms, no one may realize that wheezing or other allergic reactions might be a response to their allergy drug.
Almost a third of the troops that fought in the Persian Gulf War in 1990 and 1991 were later diagnosed with Gulf War syndrome. This is characterized by muscle pain, weakness, fatigue, and cognitive dysfunction. It's been attributed to exposure to chemicals administered to guard against nerve gas attacks and pesticides to prevent insect-borne diseases. Now, researchers at the University of California, San Diego, have traced the problems to changes in mitochondria. These are the energy factories inside cells. In a double-blind study, administering a high-potency coenzyme Q10 supplement alleviated symptoms in 80% of the patients. Lead author, Dr. Beatrice Galum, noted that this research could benefit civilians exposed to toxins, as well as veterans with Gulf War syndrome.
Fat continues to be a bone of contention among nutrition scientists. A few months ago, a massive meta-analysis of 72 studies with more than 600,000 subjects concluded that there's no association between saturated fat consumption and the risk of heart attacks. A new meta-analysis has determined, however, that people who eat more linoleic acid from nuts, seeds, and vegetable oils are less likely to suffer cardiovascular complications. The analysis covered 13 cohort studies with more than 300,000 individuals. There were more than 12,000 cardiac events during the study follow-up periods, which ranged from 5 to 30 years. According to the researchers from the Harvard School of Public Health, replacing 5% of saturated fat in the diet with linoleic acid instead would reduce the risk of heart attack death by 13%. It's no wonder consumers feel confused when the experts can't seem to agree on the benefits and risks of saturated fat.
Home cooks have sometimes been warned not to use olive oil to fry foods for fear the heat would cause the oil to break down. In an experiment to find out if this is true, food scientists fried raw potato pieces in 4 different oils: corn, olive, soybean, and sunflower. Each oil was used both for pan frying and deep frying and was reused 10 times. Then, chemical analyses were conducted on the oils. The results showed that olive oil underwent less degradation and maintained more of its nutritional properties than the others. Sunflower seed oil deteriorated most quickly when heated to a temperature of 356 degrees Fahrenheit. Those who prefer the flavor of olive oil in their food no longer need worry that they're sacrificing health for good taste. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Magnesium is often the forgotten mineral. We're told by nutrition experts to keep sodium low and boost potassium. Women are often advised to increase their calcium intake to keep their bones strong and take iron supplements to prevent anemia. Magnesium deserves a lot more respect since it's essential for every cell in our bodies.
To learn more about magnesium, we turn to Dr. Carolyn Dean. She is both a medical doctor and a naturopathic physician. She's on the medical advisory board of the Nutritional Magnesium Association and is author of The Magnesium Miracle.
Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Dr. Dean.
Oh, thank you very much, Terry. Good to be here.
Dr. Dean, the book The Magnesium Miracle. Why is magnesium a miracle?
Well, it is a miracle. I guess people would think, oh, you're being especially effusive just to sell your book. But the fact of the matter is that magnesium affects over 700 to 800 different enzyme systems in the body. That means in order for a biochemical reaction to occur in the body, it needs a cofactor of a vitamin or a mineral to proceed to the next step. For example, to make energy in the Krebs cycle, there are 10 steps, 10 chemical reactions. 7 out of those 10 steps require magnesium. And that's how important it is. When people are fatigued, they need magnesium. They don't need an antidepressant.
Give us a sense, if you would, please, of the sorts of roles that magnesium plays in the body.
Yes, it has many. It starts with, as I said, these biochemical reactions. It does produce and transport energy. It synthesizes protein. It transmits nerve signals, and it relaxes muscles. So if you take the relaxing muscles and you think of the heart, the highest amount of magnesium in the whole body is in the heart. So when the heart goes into spasm, it means the muscles don't have enough magnesium in order to keep them in a relaxed state. And the corollary of that is the heart has too much calcium, and the heart muscles are contracted by calcium. They're relaxed by magnesium. And what we've done in the past couple of decades is give especially women more and more calcium in order to supposedly protect their bones. It ends up causing precipitation of calcium in arteries and in soft tissues. And the calcification in the arteries is causing heart disease, and there have been at least a half a dozen studies showing that high calcium supplements taken by women, it's causing a high incidence in heart disease. So when you talk about magnesium, you also have to talk about calcium, and there has to be a balance there so that magnesium can, as I said, relax the muscles and help transmit nerve signals and overcome the tendency of calcium to cause contraction in muscles and in nerves.
You know, Dr. Dean, this brings back a memory from my graduate school days when there was still the belief that some heart attacks were caused by a spasm in the coronary arteries. Now, that belief or theory has pretty much disappeared over the last couple of decades, where we believe that virtually all heart attacks are caused by blood clots or caused by plaque that ruptures and leads to the blood clot. But the idea that there could be a spasm of an artery that could be, you know, causing something like a heart attack or a severe case of angina has just about disappeared from our vocabulary. And yet, as you speak, I wonder to myself, well, maybe there actually is something to that spasm theory and low magnesium levels. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. You're right, Joe. And I think what happened is when doctors couldn't find the cause of the spasm, they kind of gave up on it and went elsewhere, went looking at cholesterol and all those other things. And what we know, though, is the blood testing for magnesium is very inaccurate. Magnesium is the most important mineral in the body, and yet there's no magnesium on your electrolyte panel. If you look at your recent blood test, you won't see magnesium. What has happened is the serum magnesium blood test is in a very narrow range, and that the body creates because it is so crucial for the heart. So if that narrow range of serum magnesium goes too low, then the body biofeedback mechanisms grabs magnesium out of the muscles and out of the bones to keep that level stable. And when it gets severely low, then you've really got damage occurring. But doctors think, oh, it's always in the range. Magnesium's always fine. We don't have to worry about it. So they don't bother measuring it. What I've been telling people to do, get their own magnesium RBC blood test. They can request it without a doctor's prescription from online test sites, and they can find out what the magnesium in their red blood cells is doing, not in their serum. And that's a more accurate test. But then the caveat there is that the range that is followed is up the magnesium deficient population, and we have 80% magnesium deficiency in the population, so the range will be 4.2 to 6.8, but I tell people to look for an optimum of 6.0 to 6.5. So what will happen is you'll get your magnesium RBC test, you'll be 4.2, and your doctor will say you're fine. Yet, there you are with asthma, the twitching of your bronchioles with asthma's magnesium deficiency. There you are with bladder spasms, and doctors think it's cystitis. There you are with migraines, which until proven otherwise is magnesium deficiency. Or you have anxiety and panic attacks. Your face muscles are twitching. You're subject to blood clots, which is another magnesium deficiency symptom. You have depression. You have diabetes. Even in the medical texts, they say that magnesium deficiency is a sign of diabetes. Yet, as I said, when the doctors go to an inaccurate test and find that, oh, well, you're normal, then they turn away from the possibility that all these incredible symptoms that you're experiencing have anything to do with a simple mineral.
Dr. Dean, how many of us are deficient in magnesium, and how would we know?
Well, as I just mentioned, at least 80%. And how you know, I've tried to make it simple. I have a blog up called Gauging Magnesium Deficiency. And I put down 100 factors that can make you aware. If you're drinking more than 7 drinks of alcohol a week, if you have bursts of anger, if you have angina, anxiety, apathy, arrhythmia, asthma, bowel problems, either constipation or spasms in your bowel, diarrhea is actually a, and constipation are actually both symptoms of low magnesium.
Well, let me just interrupt there, because one of the symptoms of too much magnesium is diarrhea. So if, you know, somebody discovers all of a sudden that they're having to make a mad dash for the bathroom after starting a high-dose magnesium mm-hmm. supplement, that might be an indication of too much magnesium.
Yes, Joe, that's a perfect question, because many people, and I do get many emails about this, many people say, yes, I tried magnesium and I had a bad side effect, so I stopped. It's not good for me. Well, actually, the laxative effect of magnesium is a fail-safe of having too much or taking too much all at once. And it's a good thing. And how you get around that good thing is if you're taking magnesium, spread it out through the day. You can get Epsom salts baths. And that's the gentle way to start taking magnesium, is by putting yourself in a bath. And you'll find right away how it relaxes you and takes away muscle spasms. We use it with children, ADHD children, autistic children. It's the place to start, putting Epsom salts in their baths.
Now, there are a lot of people who say, you know, I just don't like taking pills. And there are a lot of doctors who say, supplements, it's a waste of time. So for those people who would prefer to get their magnesium from food, is there a magnesium eating plan?
I do talk about that in my book, but the trouble is, Joe, that the soil is so deficient in magnesium. Therefore, it doesn't get into the food. But if people all day and every day ate nuts and seeds, deep green leafy vegetables, lots of seaweed and bitter chocolate, they would get some magnesium. But what I tell people is, look at your magnesium RBC blood test and see whether or not you can get it from your diet. If not, then people do have to supplement. And the deficiency in the soil goes beyond that, because now with certain pesticides and herbicides like Roundup Ready in the soil, it binds up with at least half the minerals in the soil, and it has a 23-year half-life. If you're drinking fluoridated or chlorinated water, those two chemicals will bind magnesium.
You're listening to Dr. Carolyn Dean. She's both a medical doctor and a naturopathic doctor. She's on the medical advisory board of the Nutritional Magnesium Association, and she's author of the book, The Magnesium Miracle.
You know, I love anything that gives me a justification to eat dark chocolate.
Absolutely. It's one of the highest sources, along with nuts and seeds and those dark green
leafy
vegetables.
Those dark green leaves are really important, and so are the nuts. But it's really important to pay attention to magnesium if it's going to affect how you feel. And it does, because if fatigue or high blood pressure, asthma, bladder spasms, migraine headaches, anxiety, panic, depression, they could all be symptoms of magnesium deficiency.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, we'll find out if medications can affect magnesium.
What are the best magnesium supplements?
We'll also find out about side effects from magnesium.
Who should not take magnesium supplements?
And what about sodium? What role does it play?
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
If you like this podcast of The People's Pharmacy and want to continue the conversation, you can join us online at facebook.com/People's Pharmacy to share your thoughts or comments. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Squatty Potty Toilet Step Stools, creating healthy toilet posture for fast, easy elimination. More information about how toilet posture affects your health at squattypotty.com.
And by Redex Industries, makers of utterly smooth creams and lotions that deeply moisturize to make dry skin feel soft and smooth. The number's 800 845-7339 online at uttercream.com.
If you'd like to order a CD of this show, you can call 800-732-2334. This is show number 969. That number again, 800-732-2334. Or find it online at peoplespharmacy.com.
Today on the People's Pharmacy, we're talking about a mineral all of us need and few of us think about. Many of us may be deficient in magnesium. What are the implications?
Our guest is Dr. Carolyn Dean, naturopath and medical doctor. Her book is The Magnesium Miracle.
Dr. Dean, you've talked a little bit about how the soil can be depleted of magnesium and how that can affect our food. But there are a lot of other ways that people can be low in magnesium levels, and there are a lot of medications that can contribute to this. The one that comes to mind immediately are diuretics, water pills that are found in almost all of the blood pressure pills. There are so many drugs out now that just have hydrochlorothiazide as one of the ingredients. Any of the thiazide diuretics by themselves or in combination can deplete the body of electrolytes. Doctors tend to focus on potassium and oftentimes will recommend a potassium supplement, and they'll monitor potassium when people are on diuretics, especially if they have heart disease. But magnesium seems to get forgotten. So can you tell us a little bit about drug-induced hypomagnesemia and other ways or reasons that people are so low in magnesium these days?
Yes, Joe. Anytime you have a potassium deficiency, you do have a magnesium deficiency. It's just not tested for, so it's ignored. And the perfect storm scenario that I see in my clients and in blog readers is that you'll be under massive stress. Someone has died. Someone's in the hospital. And you go for your annual physical. And you're losing magnesium with this massive stress. You go for your physical, they take your blood pressure, it's slightly elevated. The doctor says, oh, well, you know, it's your age, and yes, let's give you a diuretic. A month later, you come back, your blood pressure's worse because, yes, the diuretic has drained off more magnesium and potassium and other minerals. So the lack of magnesium in the smooth muscles of your artery walls causes the arteries to spasm, get smaller, get tinier, and put your blood pressure up. So you're back at the doctor's, your blood pressure's up, and doctor says, oh, we caught your blood pressure just in time last month. We started you on the diuretic, but now you need a calcium channel blocker. Now, they have that part right because, yes, you have to block the calcium because it's making the magnesium even more deficient. But the natural calcium channel blocker is magnesium. So you're put on a calcium channel blocker and probably an ACE inhibitor. You go away. You're on three drugs. You come back 2 months later to have your blood tested to make sure your liver isn't being affected by these drugs. And lo and behold, your blood sugar is elevated and your cholesterol is elevated. Both of those are caused by low magnesium. And now you're on drugs for blood pressure. You're put on a metformin or something for your diabetes, and you're put on a statin for your cholesterol. You're on five or six drugs, and it's all because you're magnesium deficient. And the more of these drugs you take, the more magnesium deficient you become. And so you're just draining magnesium like a leaky sieve.
Dr. Dean, if it's determined that you need a magnesium supplement, are there certain forms that are preferred?
It's a great question, and there's a long answer to it. I'll try to be brief. Magnesium oxide is the most common magnesium out there. It's the one that's still used in research studies, but it's only 4% absorbed. So the 96% left over will go out, as we mentioned, as the laxative effect. But that can be helpful for the 60% of the population that's constipated. However, the 4% isn't going to give them therapeutic levels. People will go to magnesium powders and put them in water. When something's dissolved in water, that can be much better absorbed. Apparently, the chelated magnesiums, they can be up to 20% absorbed. So we have a magnesium absorption problem. The magnesium oil I briefly mentioned earlier, people will spray themselves with oil. You can put it on and wash it off 30 minutes later because it can be itchy. I talk about all the different forms of magnesium in my blogs and under resources on my website, but it's so individualized. You know, I tell people to take several forms, and as I mentioned earlier, split them up throughout the day. If they're liquids or powders, put them in water and sip through the day, and follow your magnesium RBC levels to make sure you're getting an optimum amount.
Well, you know, this brings up an interesting compound called milk of magnesia. Magnesium hydroxide, it's been around for a very long time as a laxative, a liquid laxative. And we've been hearing over the years of some unusual uses of it. And I bring this up because you mentioned that, you know, people can actually absorb magnesium through the skin. So some people are putting milk of magnesia on their faces at night, sort of as a facial mask for acne. So teenagers are trying it, and surprisingly, they say their complexion gets better over the course of a couple of days. Other people have told us that they use milk of magnesia on their armpits to get rid of body odor, which we've actually tried ourselves and found to be surprisingly effective. Now, would people be actually absorbing some of that magnesium if they put a little milk of magnesia in their armpits?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a doctor friend in Peru. He has a magnesium company, and he uses magnesium hydroxide. It's bitter orally, but people take it with some sort of citric acid. If you put it on your skin, yes, the body will pull that magnesium right in, and it can be beneficial. It is, you do have to watch it because it is a laxative, and that's where, you know, people will take a few tablespoons and cause a purge. But the assumption is if you spread it out through the day or put those two tablespoons in water and sip it through the day, that you'll be getting the magnesium benefit, not the laxative effect.
Dr. Dean, do you have any general recommendations for dose, and do we need medical supervision if we're going to take magnesium supplements?
Well, the dosage in the RDA is 350, 400 milligrams of elemental magnesium. And what many of the magnesium researchers are saying is we probably need twice that amount. So I tell people, take 700 milligrams of calcium a day. Try to get it in your food because, especially if you're eating dairy, you could get 300, 400 milligrams with a cup of yogurt and have half your daily calcium. And take a similar amount of magnesium, 700 to 800 milligrams. That's a recommendation that kind of flies in the face of what we hear about high dose calcium. But those studies I mentioned where women taking calcium supplements are being told now that it's causing heart disease, doctors are backing off on their calcium recommendations but not saying anything about what you can find in the diet.
Well, you mentioned your colleagues, physicians, and, you know, for decades, the recommendation was to take more calcium in the form of a supplement, oftentimes 1,000 milligrams or up to 1,500 milligrams. And I think you're right that there's now some caution in that regard. But many of your colleagues just don't mention magnesium. And I'm curious as to why. I mean, why has what you call magnificent magnesium, the miracle mineral, seemingly got no respect?
doctors don't learn anything about magnesium in medical school. I had 200 hours of biochemistry, and I was already interested in nutrition. Every pathway showed that the need for a vitamin or a mineral as a cofactor, but that never got translated into clinical application. So doctors can't talk about what they don't know about. And doctors are told that in medical school, they'll learn everything they need to know about health and disease, and anything else is quackery. So they really don't trust or believe in supplements or nutrients and have never studied it. And they'll take something like calcium and recommend it for decades and then all of a sudden find out it's too much. The same thing is happening right this minute with high-dose vitamin D. Vitamin D requires magnesium in order to metabolize it. When you're taking anything more than 2,000 units a day, you require more magnesium. If you don't get it, and if you're already magnesium deficient, you can be developing migraines and seizures and angina and all kinds of magnesium deficiency symptoms and don't have a clue where that's coming from. And I learned this from my clients and readers who will tell me, oh my gosh, I went on high-dose vitamin D therapy and all of a sudden my magnesium deficiency symptoms came back. And the public is not going to know that bit of information for another 10 years.
Dr. Dean, one of the things we do like to ask always is, not only what are the side effects, and you've mentioned diarrhea, but we haven't talked about any other side effects. So if there are, I'd like to know about them. And also, are there some people who are especially vulnerable and who should not take magnesium supplements?
And we're thinking in particular about people with reduced kidney function.
Absolutely. In my book and blogs, I mentioned the contraindications to magnesium therapy. Kidney failure, an inability to clear magnesium from the kidneys, myasthenia gravis, where intravenous magnesium can accentuate muscle relaxation, excessively slow heart rate, and bowel obstruction, where, of course, you don't have any laxative effect to get rid of magnesium. And what's interesting, though, is I've worked with people with all these conditions, and they still do need their magnesium, but maybe not in the intravenous form or not in a form where it will cause a laxative effect, because magnesium is so essential that the body will take small amounts of it and utilize it properly and won't cause these side effects. The contraindications have mostly come up when, as I mentioned, you give intravenous magnesium and then cause these symptoms and side effects.
Dr. Dean, one of the complaints that people often share with us is nighttime leg cramps. Mm. And if you've ever had a Charlie horse at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you know how incredibly painful that is. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while we hear from someone who says, well, you know, I solved the problem with potassium and or magnesium. What is your experience with regard to magnesium in particular when it comes to those nasty cramps?
Well, I know firsthand about that, Joe. I had heart palpitations and severe leg cramps. I was a dancer, so I've got great calf muscles, and without magnesium, they would go into horrific spasms. So the magnesium is the cure for me. Now, in terms of potassium, what I tell people that magnesium is important. I also get them taking some sea salt in their drinking water, an eighth or a quarter of a teaspoon in every pint of drinking water. And with potassium, if their blood potassium levels are low, I get people drinking potassium broths, which is a combination of every vegetable in your refrigerator boiled up, and then you just strain out the broth and drink the broth. That's your potassium. Potassium is a lot easier to come by than magnesium.
You mentioned sea salt a moment ago. Sodium has been the villain. And we've been told that you really can't get your sodium levels too low. And now there's a sort of countervailing perspective that says, well, wait a minute. You know, it's like Goldilocks and the porridge. too hot, too cold, not so good. What you really want is something in the sweet spot, in the middle. Your thoughts about sodium?
Absolutely. Sodium chloride is not sea salt. It's just, you know, it's just sodium chloride. So, and that's what's in table salt. So that can be the villain, because in sea salt you have 72 minerals and there's a balance. It's not just sodium. And what happens with the adrenal glands especially is they become very depleted if you don't have enough sodium. And to do the sea salt, I find it's miraculous for a lot of people. You see, what happens with minerals is they want to go inside the cells. They just aim for the cells to do their job. And they'll pull water in after them. So if you're mineral depleted, your water does not go into your cells. Your water will hang around your ankles and cause edema and get you up at urinating at night a half a dozen times. But if you're taking your magnesium and your sea salt, and, you know, there are other minerals involved too, but we'll focus on those. If you're taking your magnesium and your sea salt, you don't get up so much at night to urinate, because the salt and the magnesium are inside the cells, pull water in after them, and the biochemistry proceeds normally. You have cellular hydration instead of cellular dehydration.
Dr. Dean, what is the message for our listeners today when it comes to the mineral magnesium?
Well, the message is that everyone listening probably needs magnesium. But first of all, you need to read about it, understand about it. Don't just say, oh, well, Dr. Dean says I should take magnesium, I guess I should. That's just following along where your doctor said to take this drug, and then you end up with the side effects. So do your research. You can just go online and Google my name and magnesium and find tens of thousands of words about it and make up your own mind. And you can start very simply with an Epsom salts bath and prove it to yourself, the benefits of magnesium.
Dr. Carolyn Dean, thank you very much for talking with us on The People's Pharmacy today.
Thank you, Terry, and thank you, Joe. Great interview. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Dr. Carolyn Dean. She's a medical doctor and a naturopath. She's on the medical advisory board of the Nutritional Magnesium Association, and she's author of The Magnesium Miracle. You'll find a link to her website from peoplespharmacy.com so you can learn more about magnesium.
And I think it's a really important idea to get your magnesium levels checked. That's the magnesium RBC test. And before starting on a large magnesium regimen, you may want to ask your doctor about testing kidney function. That's really important. And if you develop diarrhea, you're probably getting too much magnesium.
We do need to take a short break. Coming up, we'll talk with Dr. Tarone Lowdog about why she thinks magnesium is the forgotten mineral.
How can we get magnesium from our diet? We'll find out which foods are especially rich in this mineral.
What role does magnesium play in insulin resistance?
We'll also touch on other vitamins and minerals that are sometimes overlooked, such as vitamin B12.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon. If you're enjoying this People's Pharmacy podcast, why not head over to our website where you'll find a wealth of information on medications, conditions, home remedies, and ways to keep yourself healthy. You'll find it all at peoplespharmacy.com. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is brought to you in part by Reddix Industries, makers of Utterly Smooth Foot Cream with Shea Butter, helping dry, cracked feet feel soft and smooth. 800-345-7339. Online at uttercream.com.
And by Squatty Potty Toilet Step Stools, creating healthy toilet posture for fast, easy elimination. More information about how toilet posture affects your health at SquattyPotty.com.
To order a CD of today's show or any People's Pharmacy broadcast, you can call 800-732-2334. Today's show is number 969, or find it online at peoplespharmacy.com.
We're talking today about important nutrients that may get short shrift. When was the last time you had your magnesium level checked? Do you know what it should be?
To put magnesium and other nutrients into perspective, we turn to Dr. Tarone Lowdog. She's director of fellowship for the Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona and one of the country's leading experts on the science of dietary supplements. Her latest book is Healthy at Home, Get Well and Stay Well Without Prescriptions.
Welcome back to the People's Pharmacy, Dr. Tarone Lowdog.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, Tarone, you have said on many occasions that you really like magnesium, that it's a really crucial mineral. Can you kind of give us your perspective on are we getting enough and how is magnesium thought of in the medical community? It doesn't seem to get as much respect as potassium.
Well, actually, magnesium has been one of the forgotten minerals, if you think about it. We really emphasize calcium. When we're thinking of calcium, magnesium, potassium, you know, we have focused on potassium in patients who take diuretics, and we focus on calcium for bones. So this magnesium mineral has kind of been left out, which is fascinating to me because it is so important and vital for our health in ways that I think we're even really still beginning to understand. Now, people say a lot that, you know, we need to get it in our diet. Well, yes, we do. You always want to try to get things in your diet. I think the problem is when you look at the foods that are highest in magnesium, almonds are a great source, you know, and then you have spinach, cashews, peanuts, you know, black beans. When you start going down and looking at how many milligrams per serving and the foods that have them, I just need to tell you, a lot of my patients don't consume nuts. Spinach is not, you know, way up there on their list. Black beans are not a dietary staple for most people daily. So I am concerned people do not get enough of magnesium in their diet. And we're seeing, you know, it's so important, magnesium is, for insulin sensitivity, for keeping the cells sensitive and responsive to insulin. And we are seeing more and more prediabetes and frank diabetes. I think it's so important that people are getting, you know, they're very conscious of magnesium. And if they don't get much in their diet, they should consider supplementation. And if they're taking medications like a proton pump inhibitor, you know, drugs that suppress stomach acid, it's even more important because the FDA has come out with a warning that these drugs actually can severely deplete magnesium. So a lot of reasons to take magnesium. A lot of people probably don't get enough, and adding more nuts and seeds and whole grains to your diet is a great place to start. But magnesium, if you've got good kidneys, your body can excrete the 300 milligrams you take in a supplement without any issue.
Is that the right amount to take?
Well, I usually think a lot of people benefit from around 300 milligrams. You are getting some in your diet. Some people may need a little less. Some people need a little more. 300 milligrams taken at night before bed can help maintain, you know, healthy stools as well. A lot of people who have a tendency towards constipation, that's just enough to kind of help but not enough to cause diarrhea. So I think, you know, somewhere around 300 is probably the right amount for most healthy people with good kidneys. Diabetics may need a little more. They lose more in their urine because of just their diabetes. And people who take proton pump inhibitors need to be followed by their clinician. Their clinician needs to be measuring levels, and they should probably be taking a higher amount, maybe 400 milligrams per day.
Tarone, are there other minerals or nutrients that we really are overlooking and shouldn't be?
Well, you know, zinc, before we leave the minerals, zinc is one probably, you know, worth mentioning as well. There was a paper that came out from Willoughby out of the Cleveland Clinic that was looking at zinc intake in pediatrics. And, you know, we've often associated zinc deficiency with kids in underdeveloped countries, and especially in countries around the Middle East. And what we're seeing actually is we're seeing more zinc deficiency prevalence in our children in the United States. And we probably miss it because it's hard to determine just by a serum level. It's hard to sort of detect it. But isn't it interesting that zinc deficiency, or that, you know, when we have low levels of it, it is associated with increasing inattentiveness, distractibility, hyperactivity. as well as, you know, problems with the immune system. Is there any correlation between what we're seeing, like in this paper that raises this issue, we're seeing more zinc deficiency and the growing number of children who are taking medications for ADHD? I think that's a complex question that's got a lot of answers, but zinc is one that may be more important than we have considered. Zinc also was shown in children to reduce school absences, antibiotic prescriptions, and upper respiratory infections in school-age kids. So zinc is one that I think is important. And, you know, what is it? What's highest in zinc? Oysters, oyster stew. I mean, that is just not typical fare for most kids. You know, so red meats and poultry also provide a decent amount, as well as cereals. But when you think about many of our children, especially lower socioeconomic children, we may be seeing more problems with zinc than we originally thought.
Tarone, you know, one of the great challenges for our listeners is how would they know if they were deficient in potassium, low in zinc, or perhaps even low in other vitamins like vitamin B12, vitamin B6, or perhaps, you know, things that they don't even think about very much, like vitamin C. I mean, the average person may not be getting as much vitamin C as they think. So how would you even begin to know?
Well, that's a complicated question because many clinicians are not trained in helping patients assess their dietary intake and levels. Some things can be checked by a blood test. You know, B12 is easy to assess, iron, vitamin D. And there's a number of things that we can check with blood levels. Some of them are more difficult to assess using a blood test. And the other problem is that a lot of the symptoms are vague. You know, a potassium deficiency, what does it cause? Fatigue, irritability. Your blood pressure may go up as well. But, I mean, you know, a deficiency in it, you know, fatigue and irritability, a lot of people have that. B12 deficiency, fatigue, irritability, tired. I mean, iron. Similar things. So part of this is that the deficiency symptoms, especially when it's early, can be more difficult to assess. And this is where the need for a broader range of testing for nutrients is going to become more important, helping people. I remain an advocate of a basic multivitamin, multimineral, just a basic. And when I say basic, I'm not talking about one that's, you know, you take 6 pills a day and have, you know, 1,000, you know, times what you need. I'm basically saying something that contains 50% to 70% of most of the vitamins and minerals that you need per day, and that should be gender and age based, right? So if I'm a menstruating female or pregnant, you know, I should be taking a supplement with iron. If I'm not menstruating, if I'm past menopause, I should not be taking I'm a man, I shouldn't be taking a supplement with iron. So try to find one that's gender and age-based, that's very basic. The reason I recommend a very basic supplement is that it covers your bases so that you're getting 50% of your zinc. You're getting, you know, 50% of your, or 70% of your magnesium, et cetera. This way, you're going to cover your bases, but you're not going to get yourself in trouble by getting too much of anything. And that's, you know, I think that's the argument for and against multivitamins. They're not just one thing. A baby aspirin is a baby aspirin. We know how much is in it. We know what it is. And if we tell you to take it, we know how much you're getting. When we say take a multivitamin, they're all over the board, and they contain, you know, very small to very large quantities, and too much of these nutrients can be harmful.
Tarone, you mentioned vitamin B12, and you said it's relatively easy to check with a simple blood test. But my understanding is that it might be a little more complicated, that sometimes you need two blood tests.
Right.
Can you explain that?
Yes. The serum B12 test will give you a number of the B12 sort of in the body. There is a more sensitive test that actually can determine deficiency, and it's called methylmalonic acid, or MMA. And this test is going to give you a much clearer picture, especially if your vitamin B12 is trending down If that MMA is elevated, it indicates a B12 deficiency, even if your serum B12 falls within this huge range of what is considered normal. So the methylmalonic acid is a very important test for assessing B12 as well as just a serum B12. And B12 deficiency is becoming a big problem in this country, and we're going to see more and more of it. We know that metformin, a drug that we put diabetics on, can really cause B12 deficiency. And when you couple this with the fact that older people have a hard time maintaining B12 anyway, you get an older diabetic on metformin for years, and you are going to cause B12 deficiency. There's just no question. So think about this in an aging, heavier population with all the people that are going to go on this medication. And I speak to doctors all the time, and most of them have no idea. B12 deficiency in vegetarians, a paper by Pollock from your part of the world out at in North Carolina, looked at B12 deficiency in vegetarian populations from, you know, infants all the way to elders, and definitely found there's a higher incidence of B12 deficiency in vegetarians than we originally thought, and that vegans are even more at risk. And a study in JAMA last year by Lamb, this actually was looking at patients that were on proton pump inhibitors, and their final conclusion was people who had been previously or currently on gastric acid inhibitors, so things that shut down acid like, you know, Nexium and Prilosec, it was significantly associated with B12 deficiency. So this is what I'm saying. Here you've got it in vegetarians, people on PPIs, people taking metformin, and the fact that we continue to say just eat a healthy diet and you'll get everything you need. Well, clearly we are putting people on medications that are increasing their risk for deficiency. And B12, you know, weakness, tiredness, you know, pale skin, bruising more easily. I mean, a lot of these symptoms, people just aren't thinking, you know, they just think it may be stress from everyday life. And so definitely screening needs to happen. But that's I think that's another one that's important for people to be aware of: metformin, proton pump inhibitors, vegetarian diet, and then, of course, just aging. As we get older, it becomes more difficult for us to absorb our B12 from our diet.
So in summing up, Tarone, it sounds like there are a lot of people, many of them who are older, some of them who are taking medications, maybe blood pressure pills or acid suppressors, who may not be able to get by without a vitamin or mineral supplement, and maybe even a one-a-day type isn't going to do the job. So do you have any overall recommendations for people who say, you know, I really want to be as healthy as possible, but I don't want to overdo it?
Well, I mean, always you can talk to an integrative clinician, somebody who's more trained in integrative medicine, an integrative dietitian. There's a subset of registered dietitians that have more training in this. A number of naturopathic physicians may be more skilled at being able to help patients with dietary supplements. Talk to your clinician. Be an educated consumer. You can go to, like, the Office of Dietary Supplements. I think that's a great website, the Office of Dietary Supplements at the National Institutes of Health, ods.od.nih.gov. That may be worth, you know, just posting on your website. They have a consumer as well as the health professional dietary fact sheets. And these things are just golden. They will tell you what you need to know about these vitamins and minerals. They're available in Spanish. They're available in English. I encourage you to read the one for health professionals, even if you're not, because it gives you a lot of detailed information. And it will really help you sort of say, gosh, that may be something I'm just not getting enough of, maybe, or I'm taking this medication, maybe I need to go talk to somebody about getting, you know, a level checked, et cetera. The Nutrition Source by Harvard, Harvard School of Public Health, I think is also a very useful website for helping people understand about how do you get these things in your food And if I'm not getting enough in my food, should I be taking a supplement? So I do think there's a number of places that people can go get information. But let me tell you, until medicine catches up, because right now, for whatever reason, we're just in this state, well, people don't need supplements. That's kind of the message that repeatedly gets given to people. And it is a very short-sighted, and it is not a scientifically justifiable position to say people do not need to take a supplement if they eat a healthy diet, because there is way too much evidence that shows poor people, old people, pregnant women, and some children, and people who have dietary restrictions, that many of these people may not be getting what they need. And when you layer on the medications that we prescribe, you know, we're not doing justice by the American public by just saying, get what you need in your diet. Clearly, there's many people who cannot.
Dr. Tarani Lodog, thank you so much for talking with us on The People's Pharmacy today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Tarani Lodog, Director of Fellowship for the Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. She served as chair of the United States Pharmacopeia Dietary Supplements Botanicals Expert Committee. Her latest book is Healthy at Home, Get Well and Stay Well Without Prescriptions, from National Geographic. Her website, drlodog.com. She also mentioned ods.od.nih.gov. That's the Office of Dietary Supplements. We have a link to it from our site.
We spoke earlier with Dr. Carolyn Dean. She's on the Medical Advisory Board of the Nutritional Magnesium Association. Her book is The Magnesium Miracle. There's a link to her website from peoplespharmacy.com.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show. Al Wadarski engineers the program. Dave Graydon edits our interviews.
The People's Pharmacy is produced at the studios of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.
The People's Pharmacy theme music is by B.J. Lederman.
The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Red X Industries, makers of Utterly Smooth Extra Care 20 Cream, with 20% urea for extra skin protection. The number is 800-345-7339. Online at uttercream.com.
To order a CD of today's show or any other People's Pharmacy broadcast, you can call 800-732-2334. Today's show is number 969. That number again, 800-732-2334. Or you can find it on our website, peoplespharmacy.com.
When you visit our site, you can check out prescription drugs, herbal medicines, and home remedies. Share your own experience and your thoughts on today's show.
You can also sign up for our free online newsletter or the free podcast of the show. You'll never miss another People's Pharmacy program again. You can also share it with a friend. It's all there at peoplespharmacy.com. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thanks very much for listening, and please join us again next week.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If so, please consider taking a minute to write a review on iTunes. And thanks for listening to The People's Pharmacy.